After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
Welcome to the Krishnadas Pilgrim Heart Hour. In this podcast, Krishnadas shares his warm-hearted and down-to-earth path to the divine. If you are interested in supporting Krishnadas's podcast, please go to beherenownetwork.com/KD.
Thank you for all that you offered. This is my first time seeing you, and it's pretty exciting to be sort of at your feet within spitting distance.
What'd you say?
I said it's exciting to be at your feet within spitting distance. So I'm wondering what you mean, if you could define practice. Is anything that gets you to a compassionate, loving heart practice, or is it more specific?
God forbid you should get to a compassionate, loving heart. Practice means starting to pay some attention to what's happening right now. Right now. Okay, close your eyes. Everybody, close your eyes for a second. So, watch your breath. Become aware of your breath. Comes in, kind of stops and turns around and goes out. Turns around and comes back in. Turns around and goes back out. So now for the next 2 minutes, just 2 minutes, I'm going to time it. Watch your breath. Pay attention to the breath going in and out. That's all. Simple. Okay, that was 2 minutes. You see? So a practice is something that helps us get here. Because we're so used to just being caught by our thoughts all the time and taken away. I asked you to just watch your breath. I didn't ask you to think about your breath. Think about how it felt. How do I feel now? Am I doing it good? Maybe I could be doing it better. I wonder if I'm the worst one in the room. Everybody's doing it better than me. Oh shit, I left the tea boiling at home. You know, so many thoughts come and go. You just keep coming back to the breath. This is the root of all practice, whether it's mantra, whether it's chanting, whether it's visualization. You have to have some ability. You have to develop some ability to put your mind somewhere and let it stay there without all the stuff. So real compassion is actually our natural state. That kind of loving kindness and caring for all beings is natural to us. However, we can cultivate that. But real, you know, real compassion is actually natural. So we can cultivate it by noticing how uncompassionate we are, first of all, and then trying to extend ourselves to people in a way that doesn't revolve around our own pleasure and our own satisfaction. It's not easy. It's not easy. You don't want to, there's a great word in Buddhism called contriving. You don't want to contrive something, you know, like make a castle in the sky about it all, which is just going to fall when you're not paying attention. So you'd want to get here. From here, everything is possible. But here is not so easy to recognize. So we start with our breath. You can do a mantra with the breath, one of the names in and out. You can sing, you can chant, you can do other things. They're all designed to extricate us from the constant, obsessive, insane flow of thought. Thinking about ourselves, judging ourselves, evaluating ourselves, all that stuff. And we can't do it even for 2 minutes. Can't even do it for 2 breaths, really, before you recognize that you're thinking about doing it instead of doing it. So it takes a lot of patience and time. But from that comes the strength to really be compassionate, to really cultivate caring, real caring about other people. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Treat other people. If we did that, our whole lives would be different. The quality of our lives would be completely different. All of a sudden, it wouldn't be about me all the time, and am I getting enough, and is this person treating me the way I want to be treated? That becomes irrelevant. And when it becomes irrelevant, it means you don't think about it, and you don't get hurt by it anymore. You're filling your thoughts, and what's going through your wiring is caring about other people instead of yourself. And you get the benefit of that. The weird thing about it is that you get the most benefit from that. Because you're freed of your obsessive fantasizing and about yourself all the time. So that's the beginning. It's also the end. So you just start from wherever you are. 5 minutes a day. It ain't easy. You'll find a million reasons to miss that 5 minutes. Really. So you notice that. Be compassionate to yourself as well, and just pick up from that next day. It's not easy. Willpower is very important. Once I was sitting in the jungle with this old Baba, and I mean old, he was 163 at the time. And he looked at me and he said, you have to develop willpower. And my first thought, I swear to you, was like, what do I need that for? Thank you. I'm glad you laughed. I was very serious. And then he looked at me again, and he saw how stupid I was, so he kind of did something. And he showed me inside what he was seeing in me. And then I went like, oh my God. Because I saw that I was crippling myself every step of the way, every day. I wasn't going after the things I wanted in life. I had all kinds of excuses why I wasn't doing this, wasn't doing that. You know, blah, 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 blah. There were so many programs running that were preventing me from finding the happiness in life. And I was doing it to myself. I didn't need any help. So I started to recognize that, and just beginning to recognize that really changed a lot for me. You know, at one point in my life, I took a vow that I would do this particular practice every day before I would not sleep. And you know how many times at 3 a.m. after watching 4 hours of television, I realized, oh shit, I didn't do it. I had to get out of bed and stand on one leg so I wouldn't fall asleep until I finished the practice. But just the developing the will to do that was very powerful, because will is what helps you, what remembers you. Your thoughts are blah, blah, blah. You know, that's what you know, that gives you the direction to keep at it and to deepen it. Most of our wills are completely, to use a Sanskrit term, flablengit. Totally ridiculous. We have no will at all. We go wherever our minds take us, wherever our thoughts take us. We have no clue. We wake up in the morning, we don't feel good, and we don't feel good, and that's it. And we believe it. How crazy is that? We believe our thoughts. Who told us that our thoughts are believable? We did, and so we do. But where do they come from? Why should they be believable? Why should you wake up in the morning and feel like shit and think that you actually do feel like shit? It's just a thought, a mood, an emotion. It has no reality except what we give to it. So through practice, these things don't grab us the same way and for as long. It just happens that way over time. You know, they always say, in India, they always say, do practice when you're young, when you can. And boy, now that I'm old, I know what they're talking about. It doesn't get easier. It doesn't get easier. When the doors to the kingdom of love open up, all that's going to happen is you're going to run for it, because it's everything you ever wanted. And that love lives within us. So when that becomes available, you want to be able to just go. But unfortunately, you might be able to get your nose through the door or your head for a second, but our own stuff pulls us right back into our attachments, into our greed, into our selfishness, into our self-hatred, into our stuff. So now is the time to develop a practice that will help us over time release the toxins in our psychic body, in our hearts, the toxins of hatred, the toxins of selfishness, the toxins of shame and guilt and fear. Now we have to develop a practice now while we're here, like this, able to make decisions. Seemingly. Now is the time to develop a practice that will carry us to where we want to go. So chanting is one of those practices, there's no doubt about it. But if we could just start saying Ram or Hare Krishna right now and never stop for the rest of our lives, even that probably wouldn't be enough. Even that probably wouldn't be enough. So look at what we do. We don't. We give a couple of minutes a day and we think we're hot shit. You know, it's not enough. We need to understand where we're going. We need to understand how to get there. We need to understand, not intellectually, but in our being, how to use these practices to enter into that love that we already have within us that we're just cut off from. Okay? That's what it's all about. That's why I do this. A friend of mine who also gives, you know, these kind of teaching kind of things said, you know, I do this for other people, you know. I'm just a guitar player. I don't want to do this stuff, but I see that other people need it. So I'm not really that way. I get so much out of this by sharing these days, you know, these hours with you all and with people who come all around the world. It's so extraordinary for me because I get to see through my own shit. And it's just extraordinary. It helps me so much. One time in Norway, you know, the Norwegians are not the most expressive people, and just to start with, they make the Swiss look happy, you know? So I was there in Norway doing a workshop, and there was one guy sitting like right in the middle of the room. There may be 50 people there. And he sat there the whole time like this. He had a big bushy beard and bushy eyebrows, you know. He didn't move for 3 hours, right? And I thought, how did they let the serial killer in here? Was it, you know? I kept, I would look over here, but I was kind of like checking him out, making sure he wasn't pulling a gun or a knife ready to come at me. So finally the thing's over, you know, and there's a line of people waiting to say hello, and I notice he's like in the line. And I'm thinking, oh shit. What's gonna happen now, right? So I'm, you know, hello, how are you? Yes, and I'm always thinking, okay, he's five more minutes to go before I'm out of here, right? So I was sitting and people were standing, and so this guy comes, finally he's standing like over me, looking down at me like this, and he goes, this was so great. So I just spent 3 hours in hell because this guy had bushy eyebrows, you know? And this is what we do all the time, you know? We walk down the street, people look at us or they don't look at us, or they say something or they don't say something. Whatever it is, we have no clue what they're doing, but we take it like as if we know. And then we go flying with it forever, sometimes for lifetimes. Really. So this is, you know, this is what it's all about. It's kind of, what do they call it when they disconnect a bomb? What do they call it? Detonators. Thank you. See, we all, that's the thing. It's just what I'm talking about. Disarm, yeah. We're trying to disarm those bombs, those landmines that are planted in our hearts, you know. And the good news is that we actually can disarm those emotional landmines, those karmic landmines. And the bad news is that only we can do it. So, good news and bad news comes together, and that's it. You know, nobody can do it for you. People can show you it might be possible, and they might be able to show you, you might be able to meet people who have actually done it, and it's an extraordinary experience. Like you walk into the room with the Dalai Lama. You know, he has no landmines. There's nothing there. He's nothing but love and compassion and extraordinary wisdom, right? So, only we can do that. Nobody can do it for us. But meeting people like that and having little hits along the way, that gives us strength and faith and confidence in ourselves that we can actually do this, that we know what's going on. We are beginning to have a clue. That's a really big thing. Just to begin to have a clue which direction to turn is such a big thing, really. Because it's subtle. It's really subtle. We think about ourselves all the time. We're always projecting images of ourselves for other people to see and for ourselves to see. When we look in the mirror and go, how's the hair today, you know? Maybe it's time to shave this head. Not yet. On and on and on and on. We go all the time. And it's just, we throw these images up and we look at them and then we feel okay. But the image is just crazy projections, you know? That we want other people to see so they'll like us, so we can get some attention and feel good. We spend all our time like that. Nice to sing in a city. there's all kinds of crap going on all the time. Of course, I don't live in the city. It's easy to say that. So when we chant, the practice of chanting is very simple. Instructions, the way I sing, are very easy and simple. Other people might give you other things to do, other ways of approaching the practice, and there are a million ways of approaching every practice. But with me, it's very simple. You sing. And the minute you recognize that you're not even paying attention, you come back to the singing. That's all you have to do. Sometimes it takes, you might be singing for 20 minutes before you realize you've actually been thinking for that whole time. The moment you notice that, you're actually already back from dreamland, and you come back, at that moment you rededicate yourself to the practice. You come back to the singing. And paying attention when you're singing seems to mean listening. It doesn't mean like thinking about it. It means just listening. You listen to me, then you listen to yourself. You listen to me, you listen to yourself. And this actually develops a constant flow of listening or awareness. When a thought comes, you don't notice when it comes. You only notice after you notice that you've been thinking. You never see the thought until it lets go of you already enough. And at that point, you're actually, it's already released you. At that point, you can remember, oh, I'm actually sitting in a room with 20,000 people and I'm supposed to be singing. So you come back to listening again. This coming back is a very big thing. It's a very big thing. Think about today. You woke up, rolled out of bed, went to the bathroom, washed your face off, made some coffee, read the newspaper. How many moments, how many seconds of the day from those moments until this moment were you actually paying attention? You're just rolling on automatic and weren't seeing yourself, weren't aware. At some point, when you really do these practices enough, you wake up in the morning and you start hearing the mantra inside of you. And it stays with you all day long. And you can always keep a little bit of awareness on it. And that helps us not get totally lost in our stuff all the time. But once again, this is not a willpower exercise. You're not supposed to see your stuff and beat it up and beat yourself up and come back and just try to be like this. You just sing. You just repeat the name. Repeat the mantra. That's all you have to do. And everything is going to kind of fall into place from that. That's the first alignment, the first turn towards the right direction. And from that turn, everything else will eventually come into view. So if you take one road, you have a certain kind of scenery. Doing this, we're taking this particular road, and then as we drive down that road, stuff will come to us that's on that road. And eventually the stuff that comes to us is an automatic awareness of being really caught. And when you notice how caught you are, you're not that caught anymore. Or you couldn't notice. So through this practice, you kind of get a deeper sense of center of gravity inside yourself. So something happens and you get really pissed off and you're about to get a gun and kill somebody. Previously, you might have gotten the gun, you might have killed somebody. Or you might have gotten the gun and said, oh, what am I trying to do? They're going to put me in jail if I kill this person. I'll just hit him with the handle. But now you might not even get the gun. You might not go on the whole trip. Not because you're exerting your personal will to stop the trip. You cannot do that. When a huge wave of emotion washes over you, fuck it, you're helpless. Helpless at that moment. The only thing that you have at that moment is the awareness and the practice that you've cultivated over time. That stays with you. So the wave goes over you and it doesn't completely engulf you. It doesn't cover you over. Maybe for just a second, and you hardly have to hold your breath. It goes quicker. Not because you're doing anything in that moment, but that moment is the result. The way that moment unfolds is the result of having done practice for some time already. In those moments, we can't practice. There are practices you can do in those moments, but we're not qualified. We're too lost. There's ways of working with negative emotions and intense moments of moments of great intensity, but not this life. Not for me, anyway. I cultivate these moments of when I'm here and can make decisions and do this practice and do it when I can. Because in those big moments, there's no way of dealing with those things directly. But the practice that you've done, the amount of time you've spent, and it's very simple, the amount of time and effort and awareness you've put into developing a practice of some kind, that's what carries over from moment to moment. And when something hits you, it may not cut your head off. It may just cut a finger off. Or it may just bounce off of you on the side, graze you instead of knocking you over. You don't know that. There's no way to know that. But over time, you do begin to notice that you spend less and less time asleep, reactive, and buried in unconscious, heavy, negative states of mind. You will notice that over time because that's what happens. It has to happen because you're doing practice. There's no way that doing a practice is not going to bring fruit. Of course it's going to bring fruit. It's not going to bring the kind of fruit that you imagine because the one who imagines is the one who's disappearing. So all the things that one imagines are just dreams. They go away, and what happens? They're replaced with reality. When reality is there, when reality is here, when we're aware of being here and present, then we're not projecting. All those things, those dreams and fantasies, do not project out at that time. They kick right in the moment we forget. But that's okay. That's the way it works. But you can see how it works when you're sitting here chanting. For a minute or two, you're paying attention, and you're actually remembering to listen to yourself, and then you remember something. And then 10 minutes will go by. Am I right? Isn't this what's happening? Well, I guess I'm just a beginner then. That's what happens to me. But that's the way it is. And beginning to see that is wonderful because it means we're actually paying attention. Otherwise, we just float through the day. And we wake up the next day and do the same thing. So this is a practice that eventually you realize it's your whole life becomes involved in this. Because the less reactive we are, the more we're actually available to people and to ourselves to enjoy and to not be caught in our version of things so strongly that we can't hear other people's versions of things. Maharaji used to say, go on, keep repeating your false Ram Ram. One of these days you'll say it right once. Boom. That's it. But what does he mean, you know? What do you mean? False Ram Ram. We're seeing Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. But we're not experiencing Ram. We're not experiencing the universe, vast presence, light and feeling of elevation in the heart and lightness in the heart. We're not feeling that. We're not experiencing Ram because we're too scattered. We might be saying Ram, but there's 1% of our being actually involved with it. Eventually, 100% gets there, and then that's the real Ram. But we're working on it. We're working on it. Anyway, any questions or anything like that? We're going to talk. It can be about anything. I reserve the right not to answer. The reason I don't do in visualizations or try to remember anything or think about anything or manipulate my consciousness at all while I'm doing a practice, it's because my understanding of things is that it's already here. Ram, Krishna, Kali, Shiva, all these beings are part of our own true nature, which is already here because we're here. If we're here, it's here because God, whatever that is, lives within us as who we really are, not as something else. It's not something else. It's not something we're going to be someday. We're going to be, oh, well, I'll be good someday and then I'll be God. No, that's Catholic school stuff. And every other religion stuff. They all teach the same shit. Be good, whatever that means to them. Believe what they believe and everything will be all right. Well, it doesn't work like that, necessarily. Each one of us has to find it in there, ourselves. Like the Dalai Lama says, my religion is kindness, compassion. It's not some kind of program that comes from some other place. It's about what we generate ourselves and how we know ourselves. It doesn't come from the outside. Nobody can give it to you. It's who you are. And all we have to do is uncover it. It's so simple and so difficult.